biosimilars an opportunity? Have growth prospects from the US reduced? Have growth prospects from India increased? Which are the top sell-side ideas in the pharmaceutical and healthcare space currently? What are the trends these experts are predicting in the pharmaceutical and healthcare space? Tune in to the third series of The Medicine Box, where I, Ekta Batra, talk to the top six sell-side analysts covering the Indian pharma and healthcare space and drill down to all of their ideas on trends and stocks.
Our guest on today's podcast is Prashant Nair, Deputy Head of India Research at Citi. Aside from being the Deputy Head of India Research, Prashant is a senior analyst covering the Indian pharmaceutical, healthcare and agrochemical sectors, as well as the hospital sector in Thailand. Based in Mumbai, Prashant joined Citi in July 2005 from Motilal Oswal Securities, and prior to that, he was with the likes of Edelweiss Capital. Hi Prashant, welcome to the podcast. Well Prashant, thanks very much for joining in on the podcast. Let's start with your overall view on FY20 and how exactly FY19 has panned out. If you have to pick out one trend or one important key theme going into FY20, what would it be?
Okay, so fiscal 19, I think, was somewhat mixed. So on the positive side first, earnings saw some recovery. Fiscal 18 was a very bad year, and we saw companies reporting good growth on that base, partially helped by the fact that base erosion in the US seems to have settled down somewhat. And with that pressure going away and some launches coming through, clearly there was growth. The rupee helped at the margin, and we are beginning to see some benefits of cost control initiatives by most companies. It's different across different companies, but we are beginning to see some benefit flowing through. So that was the plus side. On the flip side, we still think there are challenges which are visible through fiscal 19 as well. We think this particularly relates to the large product opportunities in the US. We continue to see multiple examples where upside from larger products are not as much as expected and don't sustain as long as they used to in the past. There is more competition in the market and there are fewer buyers. So the threshold point at which pricing commoditizes seems to have moved forward. So that remains a concern for us structurally. We think the industry in the US fundamentally has an issue despite a cyclical bottoming out. So that was the negative we saw. We saw some slowdown in growth in India vis-a-vis previous years, seems to be coming back to some extent. So overall a mixed bag, not as bad as fiscal 18 was. Growth is back, but we still are concerned about things like return on capital. We think it will take a long time before ROCs can get back to earlier highs, if at all.
So FY20, what is the key trend that you're expecting?
Again, so fiscal 20, we think growth will moderate. Fiscal 19 had the benefit of a low base. That is no longer there. I mean, it may be there for a few companies, but sectorally, we think the base is a bit more normalized. So growth rates will moderate on that count. Otherwise, we don't see any big shifts in trend. US we'll continue to see benign pricing environment, but challenges for larger product opportunities. India should see steady growth. I think what will be key to watch out for in fiscal 20, at least from our perspective, is whether the cost control or the self-help initiatives that companies are taking, whether they have more legs, whether there can be more upside from that front, because I if there is anything that the street is not pricing in, I think it is the possibility of big savings from cost control. So while there is some of that built into most forecasts, including ours, that's one element which we'll be very keen to focus on.
So cost control.
Yeah, so most companies we talk to have mentioned that with the change.
Why are they undertaking such severe cost controls, or not maybe severe, but cost controls in general? What has led them or push them to the corner to do so?
Yeah, so I think the business is no longer as profitable, right? I mean, the US is the biggest market for most Indian companies, followed by India. India has been okay. There's been some pressure at the margin, but at least the market remains, the business remains a healthy one. US clearly, despite a cyclical bottoming out of, you know, price erosion coming down from double digit to single digit levels, clearly margins are no longer going back to the 30-35% plus kind of range that we used to see for these companies. Return on capital is much lower than what it used to be in the past. So, given that the business is no longer as attractive, you need to align your costs accordingly. And I think that's what we are seeing. So, we are seeing companies rationalizing or recalibrating their R&D spends, trying to focus on fewer areas, or trying to say that we allocate more R&D resources to non-US businesses. So, companies have started talking about China, for instance, as an opportunity. So there is clearly a shift away from how important the US used to be. And given that the business is also not as profitable now any longer, I think cost control is a natural consequence of that.
So is the period of maybe super normal profits over for pharmaceutical companies?
Other than pockets, I think yes. So that's one of our main the main points that we make in our calls to investors now is that there may be a few products that give you significant upside for some time, but the sustainability of that upside or how long that upside will last will be a lot shorter than it used to be in the past. So to that extent, you may have supernormal spikes, but not something that you know, keeps going. As we had seen over the 2016 to 18 time frame, we had a lot of, or 2015 to 17 time frame rather, we had a lot of products which sustained at very high profitability levels for a long time. That I don't think will.
But there are some products that companies are working on, and you know, they probably benefit from when it comes to say some proprietary products or complex generics, biosimilars. You don't think that is enough to sustain or result in these one-off supernormal profit opportunities as much as maybe what was anticipated earlier?
So, biosimilars and proprietary products, yes. I was talking primarily about the generics business.
Yeah.
Complex generics, I think we need to take it now extremely on a case-by-case basis. So, firstly, every company defines complexity in a different way. But even for very complex products, today with just three large buyers in the market, we think it does not need more than three or four competitors to bring pricing down significantly. And when we just look at the landscape out there, for most products, we can identify at least that many potential competitors. So you may have cases where for some reason or the other, someone gets delayed and therefore that opportunity sustains. But those will be more opportunistic or more one-off in nature. I think it's very unlikely that you will see most of these products being annuities or continuing for multiple years without seeing competition. So that's where we feel. On biosimilars, proprietary products, we think yes. So when we look at stocks where we are comfortable, we look for companies who have made progress in moving forward to either the specialty side, which includes the proprietary products, or biosimilar companies. For example, Biocon is a stock we have liked for a long time. We continue to like because there the business is unlike the traditional generics business, at least as of now. So those parts we like. The traditional generics business, as we have known it in the US, we feel there are challenges there and which need to be addressed.
So we had a lot of commentary coming in from many companies saying that, you know, price pressure has bottomed out in the US. There are some companies which are exiting certain portfolios and products as well. So that market is also in turn becoming lucrative for the existing players. So given all of this which is taking place, how much do you expect in terms of pricing pressure? And why do you think that the market is so commoditized?
No, so base pricing, we have the same view as most companies have said, even based on some of the analysis we do using prescription data and sales data. Our sense is that price erosion has in the US has settled now in the mid-single digit kind of range, much better than the double to high double digit range that we had seen earlier. So to that extent, the floor seems to have come back for the industry. And this has partly been driven by what you mentioned, companies are exiting products where they're not making much money. So to that extent, we think the industry has kind of bottomed out, but that cycle has probably shifted one notch lower. The structural issue with the industry is that from a market where there used to be 6 or 7 dominant buyers, we have moved to a situation where there are 3 dominant buyers. And in that scenario, the number of competitors every product can support without pricing commoditizing a lot has gone down. And therefore, we think that structural issue does not go away. So while the industry has bottomed out, we think it's bottomed out at a lower level in some ways. And our worry is that most of the valuations, if you look at valuations across the board, or if you look at commentary across the board among investors, analysts, it's still centered around big products, which is the next big product in the US, where do you see yourself getting that big upside. And we think on that front, there could be disappointments because most of these products which were limited competition earlier may not any longer be limited competition, at least not for a long enough period of time.
So in that context, which are the markets which look more lucrative? I know China is becoming, you know, an opportunity. There is some amount of investments which is going in. But if you have to rank in order of priority right now, what would your markets be? I mean, what would be the key markets for Indian pharma, which you like?
So we think India still remains the best market. So when we value stocks, we give a higher multiple to the India earnings piece because it's still a market which is growing. We think there is enough scope for the larger companies to gain share because it's a very fragmented market. We think post-GST, we will see accelerated market share shift from the tail of the industry to the larger players. Not just the top 10, but the top, say, 30, 40 players could keep gaining share. So to that extent, while there's some additional competition from trade generics and Jan Aushadhi,
etc. Yeah, you don't think the genericization or Jan Aushadhi is becoming maybe a real threat to the India growth story?
See, over a period of time, it can have a bigger bearing. At this point, we think the scale is still quite small. Clearly, over a period of time, especially if we get the regulatory framework much tighter, if doctors have confidence that a generic drug is similar to any other branded drug, if people have confidence, then I think that can gain traction. We need more stores and we need that confidence to come in. And that will take time. Nearer term, we're probably seeing more from the trade generics component, which is organized players themselves going directly to pharmacists and pushing their products. There's some competition for that. That part of the market is growing significantly. There is some competition.
But there could be a cap on trade margins as well from the government, right?
Yeah, there could be. So I think by and large, when we put everything together, this still looks like an industry which will clock 10-odd% growth. And given the fragmented nature of the industry, we think there is also opportunity for share gains for the larger players who can invest behind brands, who have the muscle to put feet on the ground in terms of sales reps. And therefore, we think growth in excess of market for most of the large companies, at least the ones we cover, is something which is quite possible for a period of time. And it's a business which generates a lot of cash, does not involve too much investment. So we think that's the business which will continue to be kind of the anchor. So I know there's been a lot of talk on China, but it's still too early, in my view, from the ability of that market to contribute to numbers for most companies. Because other than probably Dr. Reddy's, who's got some foothold there and who's been around for a while, most companies are now beginning to look at the market, draw up strategies, and it'll take time. It's not a very simple market to target. So over a period of time, maybe, because the market itself is very large, But medium term, it's unlikely the Chinese market will shift the needle in a big way for Indian companies. US still remains an attractive market, provided your business is structured in a way where you can
withstand the challenges.
Where you can survive in this kind of price, in this kind of environment. So we are not worried about the base businesses of most companies. We are worried about how the street looks at the potential of some of these so-called limited competition opportunities. So it's more a concern on that. One of our top picks is as pure a generic company as it can get, Aurobindo Pharma. We think that business is, very well positioned to thrive in this kind of environment. They have actually gained share when other companies have had to exit the market. So we think there is US still remains a very important market. Beyond that, it's very difficult to take one market as an example. Each company has got very different exposure in emerging markets.
I just want to extend that point with regards to growth, because you spoke about India, you spoke about US. A lot of companies seem to be capitalizing on this API opportunity which is arising because of the lack of capacity in China. Do you think that that's a lucrative option for Indian companies? Capacity built up should be focused on that particular opportunity, which would be probably long-term sustainable?
So unfortunately, we don't cover too many pure API companies. When we talk to the formulation companies we cover, we do sense that there are challenges with supplies from China. Most Indian companies had started sourcing a lot of intermediates and maybe even APIs from China, and there are challenges in terms of availability, cost.
So where are they sourcing it from now?
So I think India as a source is a valid replacement in a way. So for example, companies may look at more sourcing from India, and to that extent what you said may play out, that Indian API companies may have an opportunity. How sustainable this opportunity is is something which we'll still have to see, how long the situation remains challenging in China, because I think from a cost perspective they have been very competitive in the past. So whether this is just a short-term disruption or this is for good is something we'll have to see. But in the interim, clearly there would be an opportunity for API companies if they have the right products and if they have capacities in place.
Just coming back to your top pick, Aurobindo Pharmaceuticals, it's historically always had a challenge when it's come to valuations. It's always been cheaper than its peers. Will we expect those valuations to continue, or do you expect maybe it to probably rise to a higher level at some point? What's your view?
So I think one of the big differences
Why are the valuations
so low? Between Aurobindo and most of the other Indian companies, one big difference is the absence of an India business, and the India business generally gets a higher multiple. So to that extent, I don't think you will see valuations moving to similar levels. We think US businesses should trade at somewhere in the mid-teens range. Indian businesses do command multiples in excess of 20 times. So the blended multiple is not going to be similar to what, say, a Sun or a Lupin or most of the other companies have. If you adjust for that, the multiple difference has narrowed. We still think there is upside, because we believe the scope of upside from the Sandoz acquisition, which is yet to close, is probably not fully appreciated. But other than that, I think the multiple gap has narrowed if you adjust for the fact that there is no India business there, which pulls up the multiple for other companies.
The negative view on Biocon, which is one of your top buys, has always been that maybe earnings will not probably pick up as much as anticipated from the biosimilar segment. What is your opinion on this?
So it's, it's still early days. They have just launched one product in the US, a couple of products in Europe. I think the second and third quarter results that they reported the last couple of quarters, we have seen significant swing in earnings, And if you look at consensus earnings, they have also moved up post those two quarters. I think we are still trying to evaluate how the overall biosimilars market will play out in terms of pricing, market share gains, etc. We have a more positive view probably than many on the street. We think that particularly for some of the products that Biocon is present in, there will be better acceptance than the street believes. We recently published a survey of about 100 hospitals in the US where there seems to be, this was just for Neulasta, which is Biocon's first launch in the US, and there seems to be significant traction in terms of willingness to put on the formulary, in terms of willingness to prescribe. So obviously as quarters go by, we think that it will be more evident that there is upside here, and which is why we like it. I think it's not very surprising that it's not a consensus buy, just because we are very early in the biosimilars cycle.
Apollo Hospitals is also one of your top buys, and that's completely away from the traditional pharmaceutical story. I mean, CapEx is over for that particular company, but do you think that it can be a multi-bagger, wealth creator?
I think it can be a wealth creator. I mean, we don't know. I mean, we have target prices from a 12-month perspective. Mm. So we have a target price of 1640, which is reasonable upside from current levels. But I think generally, hospital stocks do well when they don't have too many incremental beds coming on, and if they're able to execute on driving up occupancy. We've seen Apollo doing this in the past, and we've seen the stock doing well during that phase. Again, over the last 1 year, we have also seen enough evidence that most of the businesses that were a drag on profitability or return on capital have started moving in the right direction. So we are fairly comfortable with how this business will see earnings traction over the next 2 to 3 years. Mm. Beyond that, you will probably see another round of CapEx. So one needs to keep that in mind. But for the next 2 to 3 years, we feel they are in that consolidation phase where both margins and return on capital will improve significantly.
Why don't you like Glenmark?
So
they're selling they're trying to monetize parts of their businesses. They've created a separate company for their NCE portfolio. Hmm. So what is it that you aren't sure about?
No, so if they unlock value in many of those assets, obviously we'll have to factor that in, and our numbers and valuations, etc., will all change accordingly. What we have been disappointed with in the past is just the execution on the US side. And Glenmark as a business, I think in order to generate cash on a sustainable basis, they need the US business to ramp up. So they're doing well in India. The non-US, non-India businesses are growing, but they are still in some ways subscale. So they don't generate as much cash there. So if the US does not ramp up, then it becomes tough for them to generate cash, and then leverage on the balance sheet, keeps being a concern. So that's been our fundamental concern. Now, obviously, if they are able to monetize assets, some of their assets, and correct things, then we'll have to look at it. So that's possibly a risk to our call, that they are able to monetize a lot more than what we build in. But other than that, I think our basic concern has just been execution on the US so far. And then obviously, I mean, we downgraded after valuations. We felt we're at a point where we couldn't justify upside.
Lupin and Dr. Reddy's, is it because of the generic pressure in the US business that's primarily maybe the reasons for, being in your top sellers?
Yeah, so Lupin, we think there is, we don't see much in the pipeline that excites us. There is still pressure on the generics business. Plus, I think, for them, Japan also is a market where there is pressure on growth or earnings. So in Lupin's case, stock has come off, but at some point, you'll come to a stage where valuations factor in all these concerns. But at this stage, we still think given that we don't see too many, you know, pipeline drivers, we are still a bit cautious. And then of late, the compliance concerns don't help either. Dr. Reddy's is more of a valuation call. I think what our main worry is that a big part of their growth and say fiscal 2021 earnings is coming from two or three big generic products. And as I said, we are a bit more concerned about sustainability of such products. So we would typically give a lower multiple to such earnings, which is what we have done. So to that extent, the multiple that we use is probably lower than what a lot of the street is using. We think otherwise, from a say cost control perspective, they have been doing a lot. Their pipeline looks reasonably healthy. So the business concern is not as much there. It's more just how we value some of these product opportunities compared to the street.
Okay. All right, Prashant, thank you very much for joining in on the Medicine Box and chatting with us and giving us all of your perspective on the pharmaceutical space. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.